Hey, I'm Steph, and this is Not Today. Hello, and welcome back. Or welcome, if you're new here. I hope you're ready to hear a story today because I have one for you. That's the purpose of our show. Crazy, right? But for real, this one is wild. I'm going to be telling you the story of Rob Parks, whose ex-wife attempted to hire 6 different men to kill him. And I feel like just that brief tagline really speaks for itself. So if you haven't already, buckle in because we have a lot to talk about. Our story begins in 1999. Rob Parks had just begun attending Teesside University, and he was having the time of his life. It was his first year at university, and it was the first time away from home. He was doing everything he could with as many people as he could to make experiences. He didn't have many girls around him, but he didn't seem to mind, because he was just enjoying making friends. Rob was involved with the Amateur Dramatic Society. He always loved theater, and during his second year, he had the opportunity to lead the club. At the beginning of his second year, in 2000, while he was the leader of the club, he met a girl named Victoria Breeden. It was her first year, so she had just joined the university and the club. And from that point on, Rob's life would be changed forever. Which is a kind of interesting thing to think about. The moment you meet someone is the moment your life changes forever. This random person you've just met will have a huge influence on your life, and Rob definitely didn't know that his story with Victoria was going to be a long and tumultuous one. It was very casual at first. Rob thought that Victoria had just been dragged along to the club as a joke, but they connected very quickly, and they almost immediately began dating. They had a whirlwind romance. Rob's life changed subtly at first, but as they spent more time together, different things became more important to him, but more specifically, Victoria became more important. Victoria was only Rob's second ever girlfriend, and this was a different relationship for him because Victoria actively pursued him. She wanted his attention and to be with him, which was something that he hadn't experienced before. It was really exciting for him. And soon the pair became inseparable. Rob had introduced Victoria to his friends, and for a while, things were really great. They were just a couple of university students. They stayed out late and were having a blast together. But after a little while, their relationship changed. Victoria became very demanding. She started to take issue with Rob's friends and how much time he spent with them. And even Rob's friends started noticing that he wasn't coming out as much as he used to. They said they noticed that Victoria was around a lot, and they weren't seeing him enough. But still, the couple went out less and less. Sometimes Victoria would talk Rob out of plans before they were even fully planned. Or Rob would make plans to go out, and then out of nowhere, Victoria would be struck by a random illness just before they were supposed to leave. And of course, Rob felt the need to take care of her. Rob had no idea what a healthy relationship was supposed to look like. He was only 19 at the time. And he didn't know it, but he was going head first into an extremely toxic, controlling relationship. And after that first year together, Rob had decided things were far more serious than he wanted. They were so young and they needed to take a break, which is amazing. Good job, Rob. But by the time they came back to school the following year, they were back together. And Rob said he isn't even sure how that happened. He just remembers how insistent Victoria was. Looking back on their relationship, Rob said it wasn't a unique situation. It was very intense, which is something a lot of people have. But where it started to cross the line was when Victoria demanded that Rob be physically with her at all times. It's a lot more clear now to him how controlling and manipulative she was, but in the moment, he felt like this was just what he needed to do in order to be with Victoria. She made him feel like that wasn't just the criteria to be her boyfriend, but that would be how any relationship with anyone would be. By the end of Rob's third year, the two decided that they would live together. So Rob moved out of the house he had been in with his friends, and they got a flat. And even after he graduated, he stayed around for Victoria to finish her time at university. By this time, Rob had been seeing his friends far less than he had been when he first started school. And soon, Victoria began reporting excruciating abdominal pains and headaches. And it wasn't long before she was sick and miserable for more days than she was okay. At any moment, she could fall into long periods of intense pain and illness. And because of that, she, of course, needed constant emotional support from Rob. Even though Victoria had been his second girlfriend and he didn't know exactly what a healthy relationship looked like, he did know that what was going on wasn't exactly normal. Rob had really been withdrawing from his friends and family, and things were just him and Victoria, and if anyone asked him about it, he would make excuse after excuse. According to Rob, Victoria had figured out that if she displayed weakness and illness, that Rob would protect her. And all of a sudden, within 2 years, Victoria had become his entire world. But they were still teenagers, and that would have been a lot to handle as an adult in a long-term relationship, let alone a teenager in their second relationship ever. But Rob felt this responsibility to care for Victoria. Even when he was at work, he was expected to check up on her multiple times a day, and sometimes the check-in calls would last hours. He's spoken to a lot of survivors of abusive situations, and he said from those interactions he's gathered that usually you know you're in a situation like that, but you don't leave because you feel powerless. It's like a tug of war. He said the world is on one side and your abusive partner is on the other, and against all odds, against any kind of rational thought, the partner wins. They are stronger than any other force in your life. And he felt an immense amount of guilt for not giving her every second of his day, because she made him feel terrible about it. Victoria and Rob spent all of their time together, either alone or at Victoria's parents' house. And eventually, after Victoria finished her time at university, Rob got into a postgraduate course in Cornwall, so they moved to a tiny fisherman's cottage way out in the middle of nowhere, just in time for the freezing winter. And now they were geographically isolated. They were hours away from anyone they knew. So with no friends or family in the way, things actually got better for a little while. Rob said it was in that cottage that they experienced their best times. There was nothing else for him to focus on but Victoria, and she loved that. Victoria's pain grew less intense and less frequent, and she even got a job at a local health trust. And they were happy again, and Rob felt really hopeful for the future. A year had gone by since they had last visited a doctor for Victoria's undiagnosable chronic pain, but 3 months into her new job, her illness started back up again and her symptoms flared up. She took more and more days off until finally she didn't go back. And after 2 months of dodging every work call, Victoria received her P45 in the mail, which is a document employers send their employees when they leave their job. And that happened the same week that Rob graduated. Rob again knew this wasn't normal or how things should be, but he told himself that everyone went through hard times. He rationalized away his worries, which motivated him to work harder through the rough times. But when he would stop and wonder how long the hard times were actually going to last, he would just push those thoughts away and latch onto the nice parts of their relationship. Because still, Rob was riddled with guilt. Throughout their relationship, Rob and Victoria went to endless doctor and specialist visits. Nobody could diagnose an actual problem with Victoria, and yet she was still in constant pain. And Rob began to wonder if all of this pain she had been experiencing was real or not. It was unclear to what degree Victoria was faking, how aware she was that her symptoms weren't there, and how much she was really in control of the situation and manipulating Rob. Because there were times when Rob would think, oh, that's fake, but he couldn't be 100% sure, and other times he knew something wasn't fake, so it was confusing. He has said that that's where the issue was. Victoria was really good at blurring those lines. You take something that has a grain of truth, and then you run with it so it seems more believable. And Victoria studied health sciences at university, and Rob's mother was a nurse, so there had always been a medical knowledge there, and she had a constant need for medical attention throughout their entire relationship. And it really flared up when anything was going on with Rob. Like if he wanted to go out with friends, like I said, she would become sicker, or if she had to go to a job, she would have an illness, like, or chronic pain, and it's not super unbelievable because there are so many people who deal with chronic pain. But it seemed like Victoria was getting sick and having pain when it was convenient for her. Rob believed this was an act that she had perfected. It was a way to control the situation and to control him. And it was something that she used throughout the years of their relationship and afterward. After Cornwall, the pair moved in with Rob's parents, and it was around that time that Victoria made it clear that since Rob hadn't immediately become successful from his post-grad work life, he was a failure who had ruined them for even trying. She said he should give up his dreams of becoming a copywriter and they should get a flat of their own and get married. And so that's what they did. Rob got a job at a theater company in London and they moved to Flitwick in Bedfordshire. Any opportunity Rob had to do something outside of work and home was completely out of the question. When coworkers would ask Rob to make plans with them, he would give them excuse after excuse. But even with all the walls up, someone got through to him a little bit. Against all odds, Rob had made a friend at work. Someone had broken down his many, many rock-solid walls, and they were able to talk a little bit more truthfully. And this new friend told Rob that it sounded like things were not healthy in his relationship. And at first, he didn't believe her. And even if he had, there wasn't anything he could do about it. But she asked him one more question, which was, what if? What if he didn't have to do it anymore? What if he could leave? His friend said, not saying that you are going to leave, but just think about what if you could. And that was when Rob really started to consider what she had said to him. He couldn't believe it could be that simple. What if he just didn't want to do it anymore? What would his life look like if he didn't have Victoria in it? He really started considering this. And it was the first time that he really had those thoughts. It seems like such a simple thing, but he was in so deep that he needed someone to ask the question straight out for him to actually consider it. But any chance of Rob getting out of that toxic relationship vanished when a terrible suggestion was given to them by a doctor. After the endless appointments, a doctor finally had a potential solution for Victoria's unexplainable agony. First, he asked if Rob and Victoria were married, and they said that they were. And then he suggested that they should try to have a baby. According to this doctor, some women have reported that having a baby helped them with their undiagnosable abdominal pain. Victoria had linked her agony to period pains and endometriosis, which she had never gotten a diagnosis for. But even still, after years and years of having this constant pain that she claimed she was having, she had been given a solution. And if Victoria was using this pain to keep Rob locked into her relationship, what would be even better than chronic pain to keep him locked in? A baby. And she really liked that idea. Looking back on this situation, Rob feels like this suggestion was absolutely insane. He didn't even really want this marriage or relationship at that point, and he could see that things were bad. Victoria had driven him away from all of his friends, his family, and she wanted to control his every move. So he found himself in a situation where he would be put even further into her control had they gone through with this doctor's suggestion. He would be locked in for a lifetime. But in that moment, again, he felt responsible to take care of Victoria, and he would do pretty much anything to take the pain away that was ruining her life. And Victoria's pain had taken over both of their lives, so this solution could really help both of them. At least that's what the delusion was telling Rob. So the couple went through with it, and they had a baby girl that they named Grace. And as soon as they had her, Rob's world turned upside down. It changed everything for him because Victoria had believed that she was the most important thing in his life, and that was the most important thing to her, to be that spot in Rob's life. But now they had Grace, who was, without question, the single most important thing that Rob had ever experienced. He would do anything in his power to protect her, and she immediately took priority over everything else, including Victoria. And Victoria didn't like that. That was when some real friction had begun forming, because Rob had, for the very first time, really begun to think about his future. He also started to think about what kind of father he was going to be, and he realized he couldn't be the father he wanted to be while he was in a relationship with Victoria. And one of the most ironic parts of this whole situation is that that was the straw that broke the camel's back. If this relationship was keeping him from being a great father, then he had to do something about it. This whole situation had backfired on her because she wanted to trap Rob forever. At least it seemed that way. But actually, what it had done was make Rob think about his daughter's life and how he wanted better for her. So after 10 years together and 6 years of marriage, Rob had finally reached the point where leaving Victoria was a very real possibility in his mind. And while in the car with her one day, he blurted out, "I can't do this anymore," before he even knew what he was saying. It was the beginning of the end for them, and it came with a huge risk. Rob knew he couldn't take Grace with him because it would be against Victoria's wishes, which is illegal, and Rob didn't have any evidence that could have gotten Grace in his custody at that time. Victoria has always striven to be the victim, so his only choice was to risk everything and leave. His top priority was Grace, and he wanted custody of her because clearly Victoria was unstable in a lot of ways and had been abusive to Rob for the years of their relationship. So he wanted custody of Grace, and he knew that he had to move quickly. Custody battles are hard on fathers in the best cases, so Rob knew that he had to project stability if he wanted any chance of staying in Grace's life. So as soon as he could, he got a house and a steady job. And the custody battle for Grace was long and dragged out for years. It also involved 6 judgments and 3 court cases. This was a 5-year battle. Which sounds bad, but even though it was hard, Rob managed to make the most of his newfound freedom. He made friends, he met a woman named Jane who became his new girlfriend and the two moved in together, he went to the pub, he saw live music again, and over the weekend he got to spend time with his daughter and watch her grow into an adorable little girl. But as beautiful as that all was, Victoria did not make things easy. One custody ruling said Rob's time with Grace started on Friday evening, but because the ruling had assumed school let out at 3:30 p.m. and Grace's school actually ended at 3 p.m., Victoria made one of her friends go every single Friday to sit between Rob and Grace on the playground of her school for that full 30 minutes so that Rob didn't get a single extra minute of time with his daughter. How petty can you be? That's ridiculous. 30 minutes? But that was just the joy of being attached to Victoria Breeden. Victoria also did things like make Rob drive increasingly ridiculous distances to pick up Grace, and occasionally she would burst into hysterical fits of rage over made-up things. Once she showed up to Rob's front door, screaming and demanding Grace's clothes be returned back to her, since he had quote-unquote stolen them. She then collapsed on the floor, pretending that he had assaulted her. Karen style. And over the years, things only got weirder. In the years after their split, Victoria had gone through a string of boyfriends, each time forcing Grace to call these random men daddy. And sometimes these boyfriends would cross paths with Rob at Grace's school, and some of them occasionally would confront Rob very aggressively and say things like he was disgusting, evil, and that he should be ashamed of himself. And Rob had no idea what these men were being told, but clearly Victoria had been making things up about him and telling her boyfriends false things and working them up over nothing. And he was just trying to keep his peace, so there was not much he could really do. In 2010, Victoria called Rob to tell him that Grace was in the hospital, and she said that their daughter had a high temperature, she was lethargic, and she wasn't eating. And Rob raced to the hospital. And once he got there, Victoria left, and Rob stayed with his daughter for 5 days without Victoria. Grace had been in the hospital for almost a week, when one day Rob asked her why she thought she was so sick, and his 4-year-old daughter told him it might have something to do with her being wrapped up in thick blankets all night with her mother shutting all of the windows and putting a hot water bottle in bed with her, all in the hottest week of the year, aka making her daughter sick. Allegedly. A few months later, when Rob was able to access Grace's medical records, he noticed that her doctor's notes had included concerns about Munchausen by proxy, which is very rare to catch that early on or at all in general. But unfortunately, the doctor's notes ended with no further action. If you're unfamiliar with Munchausen by proxy, it's when a caregiver makes up symptoms or induces an illness in another person in order to gain attention and sympathy from others, typically doctors, and this is found most commonly between a mother and child. And it's insane that the doctors noted that this could be a potential case of Munchausen by proxy, and then nothing was done, which has happened to people. I mean, just off the top of my head, I feel like when you think about the most famous case of Munchausen by proxy, you think of Gypsy Rose. And I'm almost certain that that happened to her, that some doctor had recognized that this could be potentially Munchausen by proxy. And again, nothing was done. Nobody intervened. And I guess it's one of those things where it is such a rare and serious thing that you don't want to be wrong about that. But if you are right about that, it's a serious thing. Many people who are victims of Munchausen by proxy end up dying because of it. So it's incredibly dangerous. And I have this later in my notes, but it was suspected that Victoria herself had Munchausen syndrome, meaning that she was making herself sick to garner sympathy and attention from doctors and people in her life. So it would make sense if her pain and illness and everything was fake, that she could potentially do this to her daughter to have it benefit her in some way. So it's all very suspicious and very messed up. After Grace's stay in the hospital, Rob started getting odd calls in the middle of the night. He would pick up the phone and there would be nothing but heavy breathing on the other end, like a scary movie. He also started receiving very hateful texts from an unknown number. He had a suspicion, a sneaking suspicion, who they were from, but again, unknown numbers, so it could never really be confirmed. Things really started ramping up, and Rob started to be accused of drug dealing, gang membership, pedophilia, anything really awful that you can think of, he was accused of. And he was petrified every day, wondering what else was going to be thrown at him. Rob had been on the board of governors at Grace's school, I guess that's like the PTA, and he was trying to be as active in her life as possible. And at the same time, he was involved in a police investigation for pedophilia and physical abuse because he had been accused of all those things, which are not small accusations. So obviously he should be investigated if those were real accusations. But for Rob, he's just an innocent guy trying to be a good father, and he's now being investigated by police. I mean, it's a nightmare. He was terrified that these investigations were going to remove what little he had been able to gain from his relationship with his daughter. And again, he was fighting for custody this entire time. And the texts had gotten really bad, ranging from "Where are the drugs you promised me?" to "We're gonna burn your house down," and "What do you think will happen when they see what you do to that little girl who lives with you?" Another one of these texts said, and this is very explicit, "You fucking pedo, shit dealer scum, you shit cunt, Rob Parks. When you show this, better show them kids the sex films that you made, you sick pedo, Rob." It makes no sense, and it's also terrifying. And Rob, who knew that keeping these texts to himself would only make things worse and make him seem more guilty, went to the police and showed them to the cops because he's like, "I don't know what these are about, but I don't want you thinking that I'm trying to hide this," which was a very good move. Victoria's behavior was clearly escalating in a dangerous way. And then on New Year's Day, 2014, the violence became very real. I believe this was around the time that Rob had just gained full custody of Grace, and at about 6 a.m, Rob received a knock on the door. It had been 2 policemen outside, and when Rob answered the door, he asked them if there was anything he could do for them, and they looked around kind of confused and said, "Your car's not on fire?" And Rob said, "You're right, it's not. Should it be?" They told him they had gotten a call from who they thought was him, saying that someone had set his car on fire. And Rob said, "That's very strange, but no, everything is fine." Everything was not fine. Fast forward to the next day at 5 a.m., and Rob was woken up to the sound of a car alarm. It was shocking because it sounded very, very close. So he got up and went to Grace's bedroom, since hers was at the front of the house, and he looked out the window. And he saw this glow of orange. He walked down the stairs and opened the door to find his car that had been parked only 1.5 feet away from his house, completely ablaze. The heat that hit him when he opened the door was unreal. The flames were 10 to 15 feet high, and they had only been getting stronger. The windows had blown out, and it was unlike anything he had ever seen. He slammed the door and shouted to Jane upstairs that she had to grab Grace, and they needed to get out of there now. They went through the kitchen at the back of the house to get out, and they opened the doors and ran outside. But there was this banging on the back gate. Someone was desperately trying to get into the garden. Jane froze because they didn't know who was trying to get in, and they didn't know if they were coming to get them or if they were trying to help them. Just as they had gotten out of the house, the front windows had shattered, and Rob said it felt like a tsunami of sound that came through. It was like a physical sonic boom that went through your whole body. And whoever had been banging at the gate was still going, and then they began shouting. But they couldn't hear what this person was shouting because of the roar of the fire. And they were stuck where they were for a moment because there was no way out other than this gate. Since it was their only choice, they opened it, and they found that it had been their neighbors who were banging to make sure they were okay, thankfully. They managed to get out, and they waited a little ways away for the police and the fire department. The heat from the car fire had melted their front windows and the front door, and it had gone through Grace's bedroom. There was fire damage and soot everywhere. And at the very same time that the car was on fire, the abusive texts had still been coming through. It was a constant stream of abuse that was petrifying to Rob. This situation was a very big wake-up call because he knew that now these people could get to him. And even more terrifying, they put his daughter's life in danger. Had he not woken up when he did, it could have gone so much worse. Grace's room had been almost destroyed. The fire had come into Grace's bedroom. And as a father, as anyone, that is a terrifying realization. And the weirdest and most terrifying bit is that someone called into the police that the car was on fire well before the car had actually been set on fire. And it made me wonder what the motive was there, to call it in falsely first. My first thought about this situation was a boy who cried wolf scenario. They called it in falsely and the police showed up to find nothing. And next time, maybe they would be a little bit slower to respond because they were expecting to find nothing. And I don't know, I might be completely off about that, but the fact that they called it in first and there was nothing happening is very odd. Rob at this point was losing his mind. He had no idea what to do. All he knew was that he had to protect his family. Before now, his problems with Victoria had seemed rough. He went through a very messy custody battle. Things were always very intense, but nothing compared to this. Now his family's lives were at risk. But even with all of this going through his mind, he knew he had to stay in control. He said he had a full-time job, he had to take care of his family, and his life had to go on. He had to be a father and a husband, and so he had to put all of these difficulties aside because he felt like if he let it bleed out, it would completely rule his thoughts. He had done so much to stop things from controlling him, and he didn't want to allow it to take any more of who he was. And I feel like that speaks volumes to who Rob was as a person and a father and a husband. This is undeniably a terrifying situation and would be overwhelming for any person at all. And the fact that he was like, okay, I have to put aside my fear and my uncertainty and anger, and I need to continue operating at a very functional level. So that's very impressive. The police investigation into the fire quickly centered around Victoria and her second husband, Wayne Wood. Wayne was a soldier, and for a few years he had been based in Germany, where he and Victoria had lived for a while. In interviews, Wayne told police that Victoria had told him that Rob had spent years mentally abusing her. He was a serial child molester, and that he was trying to steal Grace away from her for those sick reasons. And Wayne said when he heard this, he saw red. And so when Victoria suggested the arson and told him he would never get caught, Wayne agreed to it. When the couple stood trial, Wayne Wood was charged and sentenced to 7 years for arson with intent to endanger life. Victoria, however, was released without charge. She was never at the scene of the crime, and Wayne did not include her in his statement. Rob and his family went into protective custody, and Victoria attempted to steal Grace away to Germany, but finally it was ruled that Victoria could not be a part of their lives. And it was around that time that Victoria met her next boyfriend, Graham Wall, on the dating site Badoo in 2018. After 3 days of chatting online, Graham drove out to Victoria's house to see her in person. At the time, Victoria was 38 years old, and according to Graham, she was immediately charming, she was warm, and full of life, which at first many manipulative people are. But right away, Graham was enchanted, and he was falling for Victoria. The fact that Victoria had a kid wasn't even scary to him. All three of them went out on long walks, holding hands, and he said he felt happy. I don't know exactly when Grace would have been with Victoria and Graham, but I guess at some point, Rob allowed his daughter to be with Victoria. And it felt to Graham like he had finally found his soulmate. She told him that that was exactly what she was looking for, a soulmate, and he was as well. But after 10 months, Victoria started acting suspiciously. She would disappear without saying where she was going and would explode into anger at the most random things. So because of that, Graham had become convinced that Victoria was cheating on him. And oh boy, that would have been so much more simple. On October 22nd, 2019, when Victoria said she was meeting up with an old friend from school at her house, Graham felt like this was his chance to catch her in the act. So before he left her house that day, he put his phone under the stairs in the living room on voice record, which is an incredible move, and he didn't even know it yet. The following day, when Graham went back to Victoria's house, he retrieved his phone and found a lot more than he was bargaining for. On the voice recording, he caught Victoria and another man discussing the murder of her ex-husband, Rob. And I would love to play you this recording, but I do not know if I can play that legally, and I don't want to get sued, so I'll just give you a rundown of what was said. Victoria says, "So with all these dodgy people you know, how easy is it to get in contact with somebody that can make someone disappear?" And this man said, "I don't know. It's not that hard. Basically, I just need to know, like, name, date of birth, picture." She asks, "Is it costly?" And he tells her, "It can be costly, depending on what you want done." They discuss that briefly, and then he asked her who she wants to disappear, and she tells him her ex-husband. She said, "I was married twice, so the first husband, the not very nice one." He tells her, "Once they've got an address, they'll flatten your car, destroy your car, and then when you come flying outside to realize that something has gone wrong with your car, they'll just put a brick across your head." He laughed and said, "Fuck off." And then that's it. It's a done job. Simples. That, of course, was the most shocking and disturbing part of the recording. But then Victoria mentioned Graham and said that she couldn't tell him that they had actually met on a dating site, meaning this potential hitman. She said that she had told Graham that they were just a couple of old friends from school. And then from there, she proceeded to talk badly about Graham to this man. So not only is Graham horrified, but he's also hurt now. And hearing this recording, Graham had no idea what to do or think. This was a very unbelievable situation, so he didn't know how seriously to take it. He didn't know if he'd look insane bringing it to the police, and also this was a woman he had been in a relationship with for the last 11 months. So instead of going straight to the police, he decided to confront Victoria about what he had heard, and he threatened to report her. She insisted that it wasn't what he thought it was, which led to an argument because it couldn't have been more clear. And Graham told her that he had deleted the voice recording, so not to worry about it. But he didn't. And he took it immediately to the police instead. And from there, an investigation started instantly. Police identified the voice on the recording pretty quickly as a man named Earl Gernon. Victoria and Earl had, like she said, met on the dating site Badoo as well, and police weren't sure if they had engaged in a sexual relationship or not. Earl was a convicted drug dealer and a violent offender. And since officers considered Earl to be the most immediate danger to Rob's life, they tracked him down first. They had to make sure that any plans that may have been sorted out weren't in action somewhere. And there's an entire episode or two episodes dedicated to this story on a TV show called 24 Hours in Police Custody that takes place in the UK. And it follows the entire like investigation and story of Rob and Victoria. And Earl seems like a piece of work. Like, he just does not seem like the best guy. I guess if you are in the line of potential hits and, you know, drug dealing and whatever, you can't be the most stand-up man, but he was just a slimy guy. You could tell. So Gernon was charged with conspiracy to murder, but the charges were later dropped. In the meantime, Victoria arrived at Ely Police Station on October 9th, 2019 at 3:15. She told officers that her latest ex-boyfriend, Graham, had stolen her phone, her purse, and her keys, and she couldn't get home. She was basically claiming that the phone Graham had handed over to the police with the recording was her telephone, and she wanted it back, so she had come to retrieve it. She really thought she could just waltz into the police station and get the phone. But unfortunately for her, she was very wrong. Upon entering the room with the police, Victoria had a slight limp. She told police that she had just had a procedure done on her back and she was still in recovery. And as soon as she sat down, officers read her her rights and told her that she was under arrest for conspiracy to commit murder. And immediately, she acted very confused and burst into tears. She told them she didn't understand why she was here. All she wanted to do was pick up her mobile phone. And from that point on, unsurprisingly, Victoria's pain from her back procedure was unbearable for her. The next time officers came into the room to talk to Victoria, she was quite literally laying on the floor face down because her pain was that bad. During the 24 hours in police custody episode, Graham shows photos of Victoria doing some kind of housework, but she was picking up heavy things, she was standing on chairs, reaching for something on the ceiling, she was fine when she needed to be, and then she was in excruciating pain when it benefited her. And so police knew exactly what was going on, but they couldn't do much about it. If she was claiming she was in pain, they couldn't technically force her to interview with them in that moment. So a paramedic was brought in to assess Victoria, and they said that she was fit to be detained. So she was pushed out in a wheelchair and was taken to Parkside Police Station for questioning. She would remain in this wheelchair for the duration of her arrest. She was slumped over in the chair with a blanket draped over her legs and a hot water bottle in her lap because she was in so much agony. She also gave them a really hard time about what she could eat, because after a certain amount of hours in custody, you have to legally give someone something to eat. So they had given her like 3 or 4 different options before it was okay for her, since she told them she was gluten-free, and then she was like, I want a sandwich, and they were like, we can't give you a sandwich because it probably will have gluten in it, and then they brought her something, and then she's like, oh, there's beef in that, I can't eat it, and they're like, you're a vegetarian, and she's like, I'm a vegetarian. So they had to track down a gluten-free vegan meal. It was this whole thing. She was just making them jump through as many hoops as she possibly could so that she didn't have to answer any questions. She was going to stall as much as possible. And she was winning. By that time, officers had tracked down Rob. And he recently had a second daughter, and his brother had sadly passed away, so he had been going through a lot already. But when 39-year-old Rob Parks got a call from the police, they told him that they were seriously concerned for his safety. And when they got to his house, he was played a recording of 2 voices bargaining over the price of his death. And they listed all the horrible ways that it could be done. Rob said, I looked calm, composed, and in control, if a little shocked. What no one else realized, though, was that my brain had decided that right then would be a good time to check out and have a brief holiday. I wasn't calm, I was vacant. Which is relatable. A little dissociation, why don't we? He said I could see the policeman's mouth moving and I knew he was still talking, but I wasn't paying attention. The whole situation just didn't seem real, not remotely real. It had been somewhere around 6.5 or 7 years, and Rob had just about given up. This was obviously very shocking, but he was tired of running from Victoria, and if she wanted to find him, she very easily could have. He wasn't trying to hide. He was careful, and particularly careful with his children, but he wasn't going to hide away and give her that control over his life anymore. He also said in that moment, as he listened to police, he was already making plans to keep his family safe. He said, I can tell you exactly what I was thinking. This was not the first time Victoria had tried to harm him. And he said, I was thinking, I'm going to have to move house again. I'm going to have to move my kids' school again. And a huge long list of things. It's crazy that when he was told by police on his doorstep that Victoria was plotting his murder, the first thoughts going through his head were just, I gotta fix it. I gotta move. I gotta change my kid's school. Like, it wasn't, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. It was, okay, let's do this over again. Crazy. Back at the police station, the investigators were having a difficult time with the charge of conspiracy to commit murder because it was a tricky one to prove. According to the Crown Prosecution Service, a conspiracy is an agreement where 2 or more people agree to carry out a criminal scheme to effect. Meaning the criminal act is the agreement, which means a clear agreement has to be proved to have been made. and there needs to be more than a single hypothetical conversation. So proving Victoria's guilt wasn't going to be the most straightforward thing. During her first interview, Victoria claimed that what she said on the recording was just a joke. She said there was no way she wanted Rob dead because then Grace would lose her dad. But there was very little room for interpretation with that recording. Police had also uncovered the reports of a car fire, which was the start of a pattern for Victoria. The pattern included a history of becoming romantically involved with various men with history of mental health issues, telling them awful things about Rob and encouraging them to make him disappear. Wayne Wood had a history of PTSD and some other forms of mental health issues. Graham was also pretty vulnerable. Bill Gernon had mental health things going on. All of these men were very useful to her. And if what she wanted had happened, she would have remained squeaky clean, and none of it would have been her fault, as we saw with the arson attack. Annoyingly, since Victoria was cleared of the arson attack, it couldn't be used as evidence. So detectives had to go looking into her past for more evidence of extreme behavior. And they didn't realize that they would find a lot. Police spoke to Wayne Wood, who was still serving his sentence for arson of Rob's car. And Wayne told them that while he had been in Germany with Victoria, she had continually asked him how easy it would be to take weapons from the army. Wayne also led police to Andrew Peebles, a British soldier who had been posted in Germany at the same time as him, but in a different regiment than Wayne. One day when Wayne and Victoria's car broke down on the side of the road, Andrew saw the British number plate and he stopped to help them. Even though they had never met before, the conversation soon turned to Victoria's crazy ex-husband. She told Andrew, who, keep in mind, she had absolutely never met before, and they were standing on the side of the road, that her ex was a pedophile who was constantly lying about her to make her seem crazy to win custody of their daughter. And then she asked Andrew Peebles, straight up, if you can get a gun, would you do it for us? They met him 5 minutes prior. Imagine you pull over to help someone. You're doing a service. You're doing something very kind. And then that person is like, my ex is so terrible. Would you kill him for me? Like, completely seriously. Police got in contact with another man, Hamish Lowry Martin, who Victoria had gotten to know through Wayne. Hamish was also kind of a shady character. He had been in a bad crowd in Glasgow and had done time for assault. And while he had been locked up, he had gotten to know some really sketchy people, including suspected killers. And knowing him for only a few weeks, Victoria sat in the kitchen of Hamish's houseboat and told him how helpful he'd been and what a good friend he was, which led into the same accusations against Rob, and she asked if he would do her a favor. According to Hamish, she wanted to know if he knew anyone back in Scotland, quote-unquote, who are still nutters, meaning who are crazy. According to him, Victoria even offered him £5,000 if he could find someone to kill Rob. Another ex-boyfriend of Victoria's, Russell Dobbin, told police about multiple people Victoria had approached to take Rob out. So the accounts of solicitation to commit murder were adding up. Victoria really wanted Rob dead, and she had been trying to find someone to do it for her for years. It's honestly a miracle that he lived that long and she didn't find someone, because it's not from lack of trying. I mean, the woman was asking people on the side of the road if they would kill her ex. Rob spoke about the men in Victoria's life with sympathy, believe it or not. He said even Wayne Wood, who almost burned down his house and killed his family, wasn't entirely to blame. He said he didn't forgive him for that because he put his daughter in danger, but when he looked at these men, he felt like, oh my God, that was me. He felt like Victoria was really in control of the situation, and in a way, these men were victims too. So with all of this new information, Victoria was brought from the prison where she was being held to the police station to face questioning. And of course, she was still in the wheelchair. They needed this interview with her if their evidence was going to have any real impact at trial. But Victoria, once again, made it as difficult as possible for the police to interview her. The UK legal system only allows suspects to be detained for 24 hours before being charged. So they were on a time crunch, and Victoria's pain had gotten a whole lot worse, and she said she couldn't go through the interview without her pain medication. She put up a massive fuss and was completely hunched over in her chair, was wincing at even the slightest movement, and she got what she wanted because they postponed the interview. Investigators obtained a search warrant for her house because Along with the voice recording that Graham had supplied them with, he also showed them pictures that he had taken of giant wads of cash that he had found stashed in Victoria's bedroom. Police raced to her home, and sure enough, they found £18,690 in cash shoved in a can of paint that had been duct taped shut. It was proof that she had access to the kind of money she would need if she were going to go through with Earl's plan. And not long after that, Victoria was finally deemed fit to be interviewed. Police were very fed up with the situation because Victoria had been really laying it on thick. She was talking quietly, asking for water, looking sad, wincing, saying she was going to be sick. But the police believed she may have Munchausen syndrome, like I mentioned earlier, because she never actually had been diagnosed with anything. When they did finally get her into an interview, she had nothing to say. She denied everything. She didn't even know these men the police asked her about, even though the police had found Hamish's number written in her phone book at home, in her handwriting. She insisted she never wanted Rob harmed, and she never had any conversations about Rob being killed, except for the one that was recorded, of course. But that was a joke, remember? This time the police had a lot of evidence, and investigators asked the Crown Prosecution Service to approve charges on all counts, and all four charges were approved. When they read Victoria her charges, they had to come into her cell to do it, since she refused to get up from bed. She was literally laying under the covers. And Victoria Breeden's trial started on March 2nd, 2020. A crazy time to have a trial begin. The investigators were worried that she wouldn't be found guilty. Rob sat in the courtroom along with all the other men involved who had given statements about Victoria, and during the trial, it was said that if there had been any mention of the arson attack, it would have to be dropped from the case and would also be removed from Rob's statement. And Rob couldn't believe that. How could the attack on his family not be relevant to this case? It was because of that attack that he, Grace, and his wife Jane had moved three times, gone into witness protection, it interrupted Grace's schooling, and they feared for their lives for years. But since Victoria was cleared at the time, it was deemed inadmissible. She hadn't been at the scene of the crime, and Wayne's initial confession had not included her. Victoria's defense kept insisting that she didn't mean it. She never wanted to hurt anyone. And ex-spouses and custody battles can get ugly. And people do sometimes make offhanded threats. But when it came down to it, nobody was actually hurt, so no harm was done. Yeah, no harm was done. It's crazy. On the second day of the trial, Victoria didn't even bother to show up. An ambulance had been arranged to pick her up in her wheelchair, and once aboard, she complained endlessly of stomach pain. So she was taken instead to the hospital. Eventually, the judge decided not to waste any more time, and everyone was ready to go, so the trial went on without her. The next day, she tried to pull the same thing and claimed to be too sick, but this time the prosecution got a medical assessment, and after a few hours, she appeared in court. Each witness went on the stand and detailed the conversations they had with Victoria, the hateful rumors she had told them, the various sums of money she had offered them, and the recorded conversation was played for the jury. 8 days after the trial began, on March 10th, 2020, the jury had reached their decision. Imagine if this happened just a couple days later. COVID shut everything down. This was like tippy top of the pandemic. I'm sure I don't have to tell you that. But thankfully, they got it done real quick. And Victoria Breeden was found guilty on four counts of solicitation to commit murder. After 9 years with Victoria and the 11 years of abuse that followed, Rob was finally vindicated and Victoria was caught. 3 months later, she was sentenced to 9.5 years in prison, which is kind of a scary sentence because that's not very long. Since Breeden was sentenced, Rob and Grace have been through counseling to process what has happened, although he does admit it took him time to realize that was what he needed. For a long time, he said, I refused to consider that I needed therapy or any kind of support, which goes a long way to understanding the problems with men's mental health. Through counseling and writing his book, Married to the Black Widow, Rob has also come to terms with the fact that he was subject to emotional abuse by Victoria, which has helped him understand the mindset of some of the men she manipulated after him. The key lesson Rob wants his daughter to learn from the trauma of the last few years is that life is contradictory and human beings are complex. And the book began as a letter to his daughter. He said, "I wanted to tell her this is our story. This is your story." And I really wish I could access this book because I've heard really good things about it. I heard a snippet of his Audible. He narrated it himself and it sounds amazing. And it's not available in the US, so I couldn't get it. I was so upset. But if you can access it, check it out because it looks like a really amazing book. And I'm positive that it has so many other details that we weren't able to cover today. But today, Rob lives with Jane and his two daughters. And despite everything, he considers himself to be lucky. He said he's lucky because he had the support to make the decisions that he did. The people around him were able to give him perspective he never had before, and he feels lucky to share his story and show that it can genuinely be anyone. He feels lucky to have kept his job, since he said there were plenty of times that he was amazed he wasn't fired, and he feels lucky that he can talk about all of this. And he knows it'll never completely be over. Victoria will continue to be a part of his life, and she will always be Grace's mom. And I couldn't find a ton of information about this, but it looks like Victoria may be set to be released from jail next year, and Rob has said that he's prepared as best as he can. He said, "I'm not prepared to run away anymore. I'm not going to look over my shoulder." He also hopes that he's given Grace the tools to ask the questions that she needs to make a decision. It could go any which way, and he's okay with that. He said Grace is her own person and has the absolute autonomy to make those decisions. "It may not be what I want, but perhaps it shouldn't be. The decisions I made, I've made them. I'm done. Now it's her turn." Which I think is so beautiful. What an amazing father. It seems like through this whole thing, Grace was his priority, and he seems like such a loving, caring man, and it sucks that this happened to him. Because he really didn't deserve it. And I don't know this man, but just from the little I know about his life, it seems like his relationship with his daughter is really beautiful. Rob works with a range of different charities advocating for male victims of abuse. He speaks to other survivors and spreads his story, showing those still suffering from abuse that there is another way. The one thing that really helped him was that friend who asked him, "What if you didn't have to live that way?" It took him 2 years to get that answer, but that sense of agency and knowing what you're worth and having the ability to make that choice is the most important thing in the world. And that's the end of Rob Parks' story. What an amazing guy. And like he said, lucky. I mean, he got really lucky that this woman did not find someone willing to carry out her wishes. And I mean, she kind of did at some point. Like, although the blowing up of the car was not necessarily a direct threat to his life, I mean, it was obviously incredibly dangerous and could have gone very wrong, and it could have killed him and his entire family, which is crazy to me, but at least it was happening outside and someone didn't break into the house and, like, actually throw a brick at him, like the other guy said was an option. I guess the arson was kind of like a warning. And, you know, they called in the car attack basically 24 hours before it happened. It's all very confusing about the motives there. Was it just to scare him? Was it to... I don't know. It's interesting. And I wonder whose idea that was. Was it Wayne's or was it Victoria's? Did she tell him specifically to blow up the car, or did she just tell him, try to kill him? It does make you wonder, because that was the most threatening, it seems, to Grace, whose bedroom was at the front of the house, because Robin Jane's bedroom was at the back of the house. So the car exploding wouldn't have even necessarily killed them, or Rob, that is. But I don't know. It's just all very shocking. And I'm glad that she wasn't successful in that, obviously. It's hard to say what will happen if and when she does get out of prison. I hope she's done with all of this. I hope that he's able to just live his life and not be in fear, because that sounds exhausting and terrifying. But again, it seems like he's a very well-adjusted man and is prioritizing having a good, normal life and not letting fear dictate his life, which is a very strong thing to do. I think it's safe to say we wish him and his family nothing but the best. And that's where I'll leave it. But before I end this week's episode, I thought I would give you a bit of a palate cleanser, and I'll tell you something good that's going on in my life. That way we can have a little reset for the rest of the day. My good thing is that I will be going on a little bit of a baby road trip home to New York for the next couple days, and more specifically, I will be able to float in my pool. So that on its own is an amazing thing for me, but also I'm going to be able to float in my pool with my friends from my hometown who I don't get to see very often. And so we're just going to do a little bit of floating and yapping as we do. And yeah, I'm just really looking forward to it. Alex has been away on a work trip in Los Angeles this week, and he's flying to New York, so we're going to be reunited. Very exciting. It's all good stuff. I hope you are having a wonderful day or night or morning. I don't know. And I hope you enjoyed the story. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out a bunch of bonus episodes and vote on stories you want to hear, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. One will be coming out next week. It's going to be a really good one. If you would like to look at all the pictures we post of all the stories we talk about, check us out on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the T on the end of podcast is a 3 because that makes sense. And just keep breathing. Yeah.